This is Tuesday, April 26, 2005. This is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and welcome. This time, we'd like to honor all of those who have given so much of themselves for our freedom and our country. Would our veterans, our current military, please stand, and Kevin, we'll acknowledge you.
Sure.
Okay, Colonel Boquist, this last time I'm going to give you a remonstrance.
You are. What did I do this time?
Oh, you're in big trouble.
We'd like to acknowledge your service.
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay.
But I think their service is more important than mine.
Well, I tell you, we need y'all.
Madam Chair, before we start, I'd like to mention this. I just wanted to compliment you on your powers of persuasion. I have my new Nike.
All right! Oh my goodness.
Wow.
These have the sponge, whatever.
Those are high tech.
Are they the running ones?
Yes, they were $55 each.
Are those nice? We are impressed, Dr. Stembridge, and we're so glad that you listen to those who know, and also that you took it to heart to support our Oregon business, Nike.
I'm feeling very
our
much
only like Fortune 500 company, isn't
yeah.
it?
So it is our only Fortune 500.
Right.
So that was about $25 a swoosh.
No,
I'm feeling like running away.
Oh, no. We'll give them back then. You can't run away yet. Oh, dear. At this time, I think it's very important that we acknowledge our 44th soldier from Oregon who has lost his life. And in honor of Aaron Kent of Portland, I'd like for us to stand and have a moment of silence. Thank you. And good committee members, I want you just to indulge me for a moment, just so you fully understand, and I know you already do, the extent of what you're doing and how important it is. I'd just like to read a letter very briefly, but this is very important. It says, Dear Representative Nelson, I'm a Mac resident, and for those who don't know, it's Mac Minnville, and our family urges you to make sure the state does not eliminate disabled veterans from the various benefits programs being discussed these days. I'm an activated reservist who was paralyzed from injuries during the first Gulf War. And it's clear that states have a primary role in helping disabled veterans meet life's needs. With the VA providing only limited medical care and a monthly pension. And many of our VA benefits exist only on paper. Dental care, for instance, is to be provided all totally disabled veterans, but the Portland VA Medical Center can only treat 300. So the remaining 2,700 entitled to this care have to do without, placed on a 3-year or more wait list. Many of our benefits are like that. They are authorized but not provided. Would you tolerate anyone in the Nelson family waiting 3 years for necessary dental care? The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs reports there are only 3,000 100% disabled veterans residing in Oregon, with only 1,500 or fewer of them disabled during wartime. Some states offer different benefits to peacetime versus wartime disabled veterans. With our VA pensions, we contribute over $8,800,000 by spending our pensions here in Oregon. The National Association of State Veterans Officers proved that disabled veterans are a, quote, good deal, unquote, for states, bringing in much more revenue than their benefits cost. We need Oregon to address important issues the federal government hasn't. In particular, education for our kids. A totally disabled war veteran has a greatly reduced life expectancy. And most of us find this normal part of parenthood financially devastating. I had four great kids to put through college, and the VA money didn't come near meeting their needs as their grades and hard work earned them admission to Stanford and other colleges. That's where my savings and IRAs went. It would have been wonderful if Oregon, like some other states, had waived tuition for children of 100% disabled war veterans. The VA estimates only about 1,500 of us still alive and only 500 or so in the age group to have children affected by the tuition issues. Another issue of great concern. Most of us never thought about it before we were injured, but it becomes very difficult to keep our homes once we get back from the war because we have to keep paying high property taxes. The $12,500 property tax value exemption amounts to just $100 or so of tax relief and doesn't begin to reduce the tax enough to let a guy making his pre-injury mortgage payments plus property tax payments plus other expenses. I know the counties want a share of our pensions, but so do our families. And it would be wonderful not to lose our homes just because we got hurt while on the job for our state and country. I applaud in particular the plan I've heard about to provide extra insurance for activated military. The military's SGLI government life insurance, which is all a lot of young enlisted folks have, provides only about $1,000 a month if invested at 5%. The state's helping increase this is wonderful. During the Civil War, the idea developed that veterans' benefits are supposed to help get a disabled veteran and his or her family close to the life they would have had if the veteran had not volunteered for war. Benefits like free state park use, life insurance, property tax relief, education, etc., help us get the kind of lifestyle enjoyed by those who avoided military service while we were overseas. I ask that you challenge every state agency to identify areas where more help can be offered disabled veterans, especially if they are non-impact financially, such as free space available use of state parks or college classrooms for our kids. Please remember that our kids pay a huge price for our being injured. They pay this through our family's reduced income. By the statistically reduced life expectancy of a disabled veteran. By having to help care for the disabled parent. By the absence of the disabled parent from family life. By having to do chores the veteran otherwise would have, etc. As a paralyzed parent, I see how my four kids have had their lives changed greatly because I elected to serve. A spouse also pays. In my case, by not being able to continue working despite two master's degrees because she had an injured husband at home to care for. For most senior NCOs and officers who enjoyed rewarding pre-injury civilian careers, income drops to about 40% of what we had before getting hurt. That's why a free weekend at a state park is so nice and yet so petty. These things aren't a free ride. They aren't freebie benefits. We disabled veterans feel we have earned the support of our state and country. to help get our families the lifestyle similar to what we'd have had without our injuries. Please do what you can for totally disabled veterans. After all, there simply aren't too many of us. Other states do it by providing free education for our kids, free use of state parks, nursing homes, unlike ours, which seizes the veteran's pension upon admission. And I won't use the veteran's name, but I emailed him and asked if I could read this. And I think that really lets us know that what we're working on is very, very important. And I thank this veteran for his service, his family for their sacrifices that they've had to make, and certainly him for his sacrifice. Okay. Dr. Stembridge, we have Representative Jeff Krupp here, and he has two bills in today, HJM 32 and HJM 33, so he can get back to his other committee. We'll take those up first. I'll open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 32. Welcome, Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Great to be before you again. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17. And, Madam Chair, I would just make a quick comment about the email you just read. I think that clearly articulates the real sacrifice and the real issues that revolve around being a guardsman or a reservist, specifically, who get called to duty. And you can address those issues with a couple of other bills that I brought before this committee. One of them, a $1,000 property tax abatement for members who are deployed over 30 days. And also another bill that will be here in your committee, and that's the Wounded Soldier Relief Fund, which is a checkoff on your tax refund for wounded soldiers who come home, both guard and reserve. Because the issues that that gentleman articulated, that veteran, clearly are very real. And the time that you're convalescing, that you're not able to work, who pays the bills? And that's a real issue that they're having to face, and I would hope that you would look favorably on that legislation, too. Madam Chair, HJM 32 is a very simple concept, basically urges Congress to adopt a National Guard and Reserve Retirement Act that provides for National Guard and Reserve members who have reached 30 years of service or 55 years of age to immediately receive military retiree pay in full. And that's all the bill does. It just urges Congress to look favorably on that particular issue.
Thank you, Representative Krupp. Any questions, discussions? Dr. Stembridge, did you speak to this bill?
No. I did not, but Representative Krupp has described it completely.
Maybe he's trying to get your job.
No, Madam Chair. I can assure you I wouldn't want Dr. Stembridge's job.
Pay raise.
Well, I know. That
then you could afford Nike.
You could get the Nike.
There you go.
Right.
$55. Is he rubbing it in?
$55 each. So, and you can't just get one for one shoe. One foot.
And Madam Chair, if you could also open a public hearing on HJM 33, I'd also like to share that with the committee briefly also.
Okay, let me just ask on House Joint Memorial, is there any discussion or objection? I'll entertain a motion, Representative Barnhart.
We're in public hearing or work session?
Oh, my goodness.
Just hearings on these. We can set these for work session.
I'm sorry. I thought we were doing that on all of them. I apologize. Okay.
Madam Chair, we talked about this week and next week having everything for work session, but these were carried over from last week.
Yes.
I see. Okay. Well, we must follow protocol.
And we had Friday off, so we couldn't reset it for a work session today, but we can set it for a work session next week.
Okay. Sorry about that, Representative Crow. Okay. Now to House Joint Memorial 33.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. just to share with you again briefly the content of HJM 33 is it urges Congress again to direct the Department of Defense to minimize the amount of time that members of the National Guard and Reserve are away from their home. As you know, over the last 3 years, we've seen literally the largest call-up of citizen soldiers since World War II. And you know also that 40% of the troops in Iraq are members of the National Guard and Reserve. We, in Oregon, have committed 70% of our troops to the conflict in the Middle East, and we've mobilized over 75% of our forces for the war on terror. 12-month deployments, 18-month deployments, like the two of the 162 that I visited on the ground in Iraq, as you know, as we've discussed previously, are extraordinarily difficult on families. And I think it's appropriate that we urge the Department of Defense to consider a shorter rotational time period. Not everyone agrees with that, but after you spend time chatting with family members who've been away for that long, you realize the incredible problems it creates in their lives as a whole. And I think this is just a fair idea that we would urge the Department of Defense to consider a shorter rotational period, as other services do with their members. That's really all we're doing here.
Thank you, Representative Stokes. Any questions of the representatives? On House Joint Memorial 32, I was remiss when I did not explain that I could have a conflict of interest, as I am a joint sponsor on 32 with Representative Krupp, and on 33, Brian Boquist, Representative Boquist, is a joint sponsor of this bill.
And Madam Chair, if I also may share with you one component of HJM 33 that makes perfect sense and common sense to me, is that it also urges DOD, Department of Defense, to utilize state training facilities where appropriate for train-up, which again makes sense because that shortens the time that you are away from your families. The two of the 162 had a five-month train-up period in Fort Hood, Texas, and that added to the total time that they were away from their families. And that is a story that's being repeated with many Guard and Reserve units all over the country. And where it is feasible and possible, Madam Chair, this HJM also urges the Department of Defense to consider using state train-up facilities to make life easier.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anyone else wishing to testify on either one of these House joint memorials?
Representative Barnhart. Thank you. I just wanted to note to Representative Krupp that when we visited the coast, we saw such a facility,
yes,
which easily could have resulted in the savings of considerable home time,
sure,
to our National Guardsmen. So I'm really pleased that you, yes, brought that up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Barnhart, thanks.
Okay. Seeing no one else who would like to testify, I'm going to close the public hearings on House Joint Memorial 32 and House Joint Memorial 33. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, very much, members.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorials 9, 14, and 34.
Madam Chair, House Joint Memorial 9 urges Congress to pass legislation giving families of reservists health insurance coverage when the reservist is called to active duty. House Joint Memorial 14 urges Congress to fund health care for veterans without increased copayments and user fees.
Yes, sir.
HJM 34 urges Congress to pass the National Guard Bill of Rights Act 2005, giving reservists right to qualify affordable health care.
Thank you very much.
Quality affordable health care.
Okay. Once again, I'll explain that House Joint Memorial is a bill that I sponsored. That was very important to the families of reservists. Representative Boquist, since we have had various bills here, the question has come up, don't we now have health insurance coverage when a reservist is called up?
Madam Chair, that's correct. Number 9 has already been implemented by Congress and the Department of Defense.
Okay.
You mean they read our minds? That's good.
That is good. Thank
I would not go that far.
Okay, well, that's a good, and then so I will close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 9, and I'm glad for those reservists who brought that to our attention. Glad to know that that one is taken care of. Yep. And now to House Joint Memorial 13.
Oh, wow.
14, excuse me.
We'll see.
This is the House Joint Memorial urging the funding of health care for veterans without increased co-payments and user fees. The only thing after the letter that you heard, my concern is for the dental services, and as you heard from this veteran, and I am looking at this bill, and I do not see that this includes visual and dental or mental. We could add it. Would there be any problem with any member here adding mental, dental, and visual? Okay. Is there any other testimony regarding House Joint Memorial 14? If not, we will amend it to include dental, mental, and vision. Visual.
And do you want it in the therefores or in the whereases?
I think we're going to say whereas.
Okay, we need a whereas also then.
We have been remiss as a country in providing these three types of critical service. I certainly agree with the veteran who wrote the letter. Okay. Any other discussion? Oh, regarding this bill that I wrote on.
No, that's fine. You can keep
okay,
that.
Thank you.
And I'll get another one. Madam Chair, I just simply wanted to note for the record that we've already heard a lot of testimony in this committee on other bills that clearly and strongly support both the House Joint Memorial 14 and the proposed amendment.
Thank you, and you're absolutely right. Okay, we will amend that, and I'll close the public hearing on... Kevin O'Reilly, please. Please come up.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Chair Nelson, members of the committee, as Representative Barnhart just mentioned, there's been a lot of testimony this session on just such problems faced by VA healthcare, Veterans Healthcare. With your indulgence, I'd like to also address House Joint Memorial 18, which is very closely tied to this one. For the record, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm with the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. The Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America is the state chapter of a national veteran service organization, the Paralyzed Veterans of America. The Paralyzed Veterans of America has long fought for mandatory funding for VA health care. We believe mandatory funding is the best avenue for providing adequate funding for the Veterans Administration health care system. We are excited and encouraged to see that a state's legislative body also asks that our veterans' health care system receive adequate funding, and to do so without asking the veterans to foot the cost. We believe that providing those who have served our great nation is part of the cost of our military. We applaud Oregon State's legislature in standing up for those who have so honorably served our country. On behalf of our veterans, thank you. We also believe that such a memorial as this should be sent to each member of the Veterans Appropriations Committees, both in the House and the Senate. Thank you very much. If there's any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for That's fine. Any questions? Okay. Appreciate that. And you're exactly right. There's a close tie between these two. Okay. Got so many pieces of paper here this morning. I'm kind of stumbling over my own issues. I'll close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 14 and now to 34. House Joint Memorial 34.
Madam Chair, I would note that the principal sponsor of this act in the United States House in 2004 was Representative Darlene Cooley, who we had as a guest in our committee earlier in the session. And I was concerned that there was no such bill in the House. But then I note earlier this month, on the 12th, she introduced it again. She's the principal sponsor of the National Guard and Reserve Bill of Rights Act of 2005, and its bill number is H.R. 1565.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stembridge, and I'm really proud of the good Darlene Hooley and all of her efforts on behalf of our veterans. Kevin, do you wish to testify on this bill also, please?
Chair Nelson, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I represent the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. House Joint Memorial 34 asked Congress to provide health care through the TRICARE system to National Guard and Reserve troops. It asked Congress to support the National Guard and Reservists Bill of Rights. We support this memorial. We believe that our Guard and Reserve forces are as necessary and deserving as active duty military personnel. As such, they should be afforded the same basic entitlements as active duty personnel. On a personal note, back 100 years ago when I was in the military, we considered Guard and Reserve to be second-class soldiers. We made fun of them on a constant basis and at every opportunity belittled them. I think the last few years have proven that our Guard and Reserve forces are anything but second-class. They are top-notch, and they are well-deserving of being considered.
Absolutely.
Top-notch and treated as such. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you may or may not know this, Kevin. Does that National Guard Bill of Rights include issues beyond health care? I was thinking it included a whole series of things.
It does. My understanding is it does. I haven't read the entire thing yet.
Okay. We will provide you with that just shortly this week.
Okay. I'm just thinking, Madam Chair, we may want to, in terms of amendments down in line 17, where it references the quality of affordable health care, we may want to just reference the other components of that just by topic.
I certainly agree with you. Good point. Okay, and we will get everyone a copy of this act. Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Joint Memorial 34? If not, I'll close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 34. I will open a public hearing and work session now on House Bill 2932, the most voluminous bill that we will ever be working on in this committee.
Madam Chair, the amendment that you are talking about on House Bill 2932 would create a Department of Veterans Affairs, and that's the reason that it's so voluminous. Actually, the bill is one of the shortest bills that you might have. It goes seven lines.
It's the amendment that's voluminous.
The amendment has more pages than the original bill has lines. And the reason is because every time they saw the Director of Veterans Affairs, they went and had changed the wording on that so that the department was there. So most of these, almost all of this, is just conforming language.
Thank you very much. I will now open public hearing and work session on House Bill 2932. And I thank you for just running you all over the place today. I'd like to call Mr. McDonald.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans, and we support any bill that supports the Department of Veterans Affairs.
All right. Well, that's probably his shortest testimony ever. We go from the longest amendment to Mr. McDonald's shortest testimony, and thank you, well said. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2932? I'd like to call Department of Veteran Affairs forward. And we have Assistant Director here. Welcome, Paula.
Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The amendments proposed to House Bill 2932 would establish the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The Department of Veterans Affairs certainly supports this bill wholeheartedly and would appreciate your passage of such bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for being here, Paula. And I'm assuming that Director Willis says the same thing?
Yes, he certainly does.
Speaking on his behalf,
I am.
We have replaced Director Willis throughout the all of those volumes of statutes by the Department of Veteran Affairs, almost totally. But he is of agreement, and we want to very much thank our legislative council. Without them, we wouldn't have gotten through this, and I know that Aaron and Jim went through lots of efforts. They must have had to comb every page of the statutes to find anything relative to the department. So LCO gets an A+, and we'll remember them at the end of the session because they were just awesome, and we appreciate it. Thank you,
Madam
so much.
Chair. The department would certainly concur with that. LFO did a fabulous job. I think I owe you a dollar for that. But yes, I just wanted to, for the record, indicate that yes, the director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Jim Willis, concurs, and very much wanted to be here, and unfortunately was unable to be here.
What I think is great is that tomorrow, as you all know, we begin the an annual meeting of the County Service Veteran Service Officers.
Yes, Madam Chair, their annual training conference.
And since we have given them some additional responsibilities, as well as have given the department additional responsibilities, I think it's great that we will pass this today and move forward. So thank you very much. Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul, it's sort of an open-ended question, but in your opinion, reading this bill, this amendment, does it change in any way, large or small, the way that the Department of Veterans Affairs operates on a daily basis?
Madam Chair, Representative Bruin, no, it will not change the way the department operates.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two related questions. Have you looked at language, other language in statute that establishes other departments? And is this language parallel for other departments?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, I have not looked at the language relating to other departments, but have relied upon legislative fiscals. Legislative Council's expertise.
If I could just follow up on that, and maybe Jim knows, the language on page 2 of the amendment talks about the Department of Veterans Affairs shall be under the supervision and control of the Director of Veterans Affairs. Is our assumption that that's just standard language used in other departments in terms of the oversight for the department?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, that would be my assumption.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, speaking of legislative fiscal, is there a fiscal attached to this bill?
There is, isn't there? to some degree, but we've done it through other means. So.
All right. So it's really just an administrative cost?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, yes, that is correct. It's just administrative. Where it indicates that it's the director previously, it would now be the department. So it wouldn't have a huge impact on us.
Madam Chair, I would just like to say that I think the biggest reaction in the offices around the Capitol was kind of disbelief. They said, there isn't a Department of Veterans Affairs because the station already says Department of Veterans Affairs. We use ODVA in our acronym for purposes of contributing to the acronym fund. And we have the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, so that's why we understood that there would be a very low cost, if any, to this. And we requested the fiscal. We have not yet received a fiscal, I don't believe. Aaron, have we received a fiscal on this one? I don't believe so.
Well, I think it's amazing that Director Willis has been using the DBA of the Department of Veteran Affairs. Kind of unusual for a former state policeman. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a serious matter, and it's important that we get it done. But Representative Boquist, in a private conversation just a moment ago, pointed out that we may actually have snookered the gnomes. There may be bond undertakings in which we borrow billions of dollars under a name that doesn't actually exist. I hope that's not the case, but in either case, we're going to make them legal with this amendment. It sounds to me as though there's not a whole lot of a fiscal, if I could ask a question now. It doesn't sound to me like there's a lot of a fiscal if you're already using stationery that says Department of Veterans Affairs. You don't even have to buy new stationery, do you?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, you're absolutely right. We do not. Probably from the legality standpoint, I would say that probably with whenever there was something that required signature, it indicate Director of Veterans Affairs. Now it could be Director Department of Veterans Affairs, I suppose. But no, we wouldn't have to be purchasing stationery, anything. We really go by the Department of Veterans Affairs already.
Mm-hmm. I did, just in case, bring the budget. So if anybody, wants to look at after the meeting, see exactly, what we have funded there, I'm happy to do so, but it has already passed. the Ways and Means Committee, in fact, I think it was one of the first ones, or if not the first, to breeze through, and we're grateful for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Barnhart.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am.
And Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2932.
Representative Barnhart has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2932. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, the Dash 1 is adopted.
Are we ready to go to the floor?
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2932 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Bill 2932 as amended by the Dash 1 amendment to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection or discussion? Sorry. Okay, Aaron.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Bogus.
Aye.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative
Hines.
Aye.
Representative
Thomas.
Aye.
Chair Thomas. Aye. Well, that was unanimous, and that is to the relief of, I'm sure, of some 370,000 veterans in this state and all the associations and all of the members of that department who know that very soon they will be rehired in this in this new department. If it's okay with the committee, since this is about the cornerstone of all we've done, would it be okay if I could carry that bill? I'm sure we're going to have some explanations to make. Thank you very much.
It could be a lot of fun, Madam Chair.
It could be. Hopefully we'll do it just like Mr. McDonald did. And then if not, I expect you all to be there to back me up, okay? I'll close the public hearing and the work session on House Bill 2932 with its Dash 1 amendment. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3053.
Madam Chair. Chair, House Bill 3053, you heard on the 24th of March, it creates a program to pay resident tuition costs for veterans who attend public post-secondary institutions agree to become teachers in poverty areas or in subject areas of math, science, or special education. It establishes the Oregon Teachers Program within the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. You have dash one amendments which restrict the financial awards to the payment of tuition, not books, supplies, housing, food, or other school costs. It eliminates the time restriction on eligibility, and that restriction was that people had to be discharged after September 11, 2001, and begin schooling not later than 5 years after discharge. So those limitations are removed by the dash one. And it also appropriates $165,000 general fund to the program. This has a subsequent referral to the Education Committee.
Thank you. Representative Comp, would you like to speak to this bill and the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman.
Wonderful bill.
What I did after the initial public hearing was take and consult with the Oregon State Scholarship Commission, or the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and also the person at the Department of Education that also works with this program for Oregon Troops to Teachers. And what we really learned as we looked at the fine detail of this, that the current Oregon Troops to Teacher program was limited to people that already had a bachelor's degree.
Oh, really?
And so then...
Has that one expired?
No, that's still current.
That's still current.
But it's only for folks that have already finished their college. And so then it was imperative that we clarify that this is for people getting their bachelor's degree. And then the current funding for that at the national level, federal level, is $165,000. And that supports that program for people that already have their bachelor's degree, supports approximately 30 to 35 people. And so that this, too, then, would be the equivalent of that. Actually, we would actually probably be able to support more than that because the post-bac tuition costs are higher. And so that I would hope to, you know, be able to support 40 to 50 people working on their bachelor's degree to get to that step so that they can teach. And it was a really good, interesting process to work with the Scholarship Commission and Oregon Department of Education on these to fine-tune this so it makes it very doable.
Well, I expected you to be so thorough, and I'm certainly glad you were. We don't know what we don't know.
Exactly.
And I would not have known this. I did not even know there was already a program in effect before you brought this up. And I think this is awesome. And we need good teachers. And I think it's a very well-made bill.
Thank you.
Is there any public testimony that's scheduled?
You could ask if there's anyone who
wants to speak to House Bill 3053? Any other questions to Representative
Comp? I knew this was going to come out more and more when we go through this with a fine-tooth comb in lines of the original bill, in lines 6 and 7 and on down. There are no reference to Merchant Marine.
Okay.
Sorry.
So I don't know what we'll need to do from there, Dr. Stamper.
Let
me comment about that.
Madam Chair, the question has come up on ways and means on this and a couple other bills that you have today that have subsequent referrals to other committees. So I'm assuming that it'd be simplest if you pass it on to the other committees and we can let them know that there's a fiscal that either the fiscal staff or it's obvious in this bill that we have $165,000 appropriated for it, that it should go through ways and means. And I think I would suggest that you send it on to education because that's where the subsequent referral is. They're under the similar time constraints as this committee, and Ways and Means will stay open after that, so it can go to Ways and Means after it goes to education.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, I remember our previous conversation about this issue. In the meantime, I've remembered that the members of the Merchant Marine who are involved in transport involving support for combat operations are always members of the Navy or the Navy Reserve. And I think they're covered then under the bill as it exists. But I'm getting a shaking of the head.
I asked that question this last week
you
myself,
okay.
And
I
found out that we don't know what we don't know.
We don't know what we don't know. All right. Well, tried to fix it.
Okay. Didn't come on. Well, let's get an authority up here on this subject.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jack LaBox. I represent the American Legion, the Vietnam Veterans Association, the 40 and 8, and also a member of the American Marine Association. I worked in the Merchant Marine. The Merchant Marine have always been civilians working for the Department of the Navy and transport. They just recently, a few years ago, claimed or was awarded veteran status from the service in World War II. In World War II, they lost more personnel per capita than any other branch of the service combined, all branches of the service combined. They are not members of the armed forces in any way. They just work for them. I don't even think they get civil service status for working for them.
But, and I believe that was like in 1988 or something when they were formally recognized.
Okay, takes care of that.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
I might say this is really for Representative Comp, but as a member of the Education Committee, I would be happy to propose that amendment or back you up on your proposal.
Well, that would be wonderful, Representative Farr.
Good. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
LaBox.
You, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion, please. Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, I move the House Bill 53 to the Committee on Education with a do pass recommendation.
Dash one.
No. Oh, amendments.
You have the amendment. Yeah.
Sorry.
On the amendment.
Let's withdraw that motion and move a different motion to adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3053.
Representative Barnhart has moved that we adopt the dash one amendment to House Bill 3053. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, dash one amendment is adopted. Now, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now we move House Bill 3053 to the Committee on Education with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Bill 3053 as amended by Amendment dash 1 to the Education Committee with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Chairman Nelson, the only thing that I know that we submitted, every committee member that asked to be part of this sponsor here, it's not on here, but that everybody on this committee is part of the sponsorship on this bill now.
Thank you. I was kind of wondering myself.
Yes, because we did that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That will show up on the A.
The dash.
On the A version of the bill.
Okay.
Once it gets to education.
Right.
Okay. No discussion? Aaron, please.
Representative
Bowman.
Aye.
Representative
Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Comp.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. A unanimous vote in favor of House Bill 3053 with its dash one amendment. And once again, Representative Comp, I just think this is awesome. And thank you so much for bringing this bill. Troops of Teachers has such a good ring to it.
It really does. And our students, the benefit to our students is beyond, you can't explain it. It just is an incredible opportunity.
You know, this is a perfect time to bring up Representative Hunt and my visit to Youth Challenge at Ben.
Oh.
Committee members, I've just got to tell you. If you've never seen the Youth Challenge program, this is for kids 16 and older. They make their own determination to go to this school in Bend. If you've not seen it, you got to see it to believe it. We should have such an alternative school attached to every one of our counties. I swear it is just the most outstanding. You know, I thought about this last night in my town hall. They were talking about school maladjusted kids. And I thought, my gosh, you know, I just saw all of these students whose grade point average rose immediately on enrollment. Of course, they were carefully selected, number one. Everybody who wants to get in the program does not. But these kids, their grade point average was up. They all wear the same uniform, so there's no class distinction. They all do the same thing. Can you believe a bunch of teenagers without a TV, a radio, a newspaper? They can't even receive mail that has a symbol of Coors Beer on it.
That's good.
I mean, it's such a wholesome environment, and you would not believe, you know, 100 kids or however many, there's more than that there. Their lockers, their beds, I mean, their shoes under their beds were meticulously aligned. I wanted to cry when I heard every one of them tell the story. They were either on drugs, they couldn't get along with their dad, didn't like their mother, you know, felt school, they were bullied. And now you've got leaders. I asked them, you know, what are you going to do now when you go back to your other school to get your, you know, final time in? I mean, you're going to be a totally different person. How are you going to raise all these others up and hopefully the 30% who are dropping out and give them an opportunity? And, I mean, they were so humble, but at the same time now, and they don't get to graduate without a plan for the future and without a mentor. And if every school did this, I mean, that mentor staying in their lives for a year or more is incredibly important. I just thought, you know, you're going back now. You came when you were down. Now you're up. You know, now you're leaders. It's just unbelievably awesome. I want to compliment Colonel Caldwell. We saw a huge banner complimenting him on this program. He's the best in the nation. And then this school, you know, has been number one in the nation, you know, several times. It's just unbelievably wonderful. So, and I'm so thankful this legislature is helping with the funding. It's unbelievable. Representative Collins.
The other comment I'd make about the Oregon Challenge Program is that the students in 5 months earn 8 credits, which is the equivalent of a full year in a regular school. So when I read that, I thought, there's more than one lesson to be learned here. 8 credits in 5 months, that's pretty astounding.
Unbelievable. It's just incredible. Representative Hunt, how did you feel about it?
Yeah, I had the exact same reaction, Madam Chair. And I think, I mean, when you take out TV, telephones, caffeine, all the distractions of
bad
life,
friends.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing what you can accomplish. I also found it, I mean, these kids are coming from all over Oregon. It's fascinating. They, you know, you'd think they'd be geographically at least close to Bend. They're coming from all over Oregon. The second kid I met coming off was a Putnam High School graduate from my district, or Putnam High School dropout from my district. But the other fascinating thing I found is the funding for the program is just a microcosm of the challenges facing the state, because they get part of their funding comes from ADMW, the students, right. the ADMW Wait. From the state goes through Ben Lapine, the state school fund. Part of their resources come out of the state general fund, and then they get federal matching funds for every state dollar we produce. I think it's $1.50 in federal funds that comes. And one of the challenges has been that they've not been able to match all the federal funds that they would have been entitled to because of reduced state aid. And so it's a huge, great investment. And they're going, you know, they're enlisting in the military. They are going to community college. They're going into the workforce. They're becoming upstanding tax-paying citizens. A great investment.
Their graduation is June the 14th. And if you're not doing anything that day, be something spectacular to see. What's amazing to me is that they are away from the city in this huge facility, about as big as this building, but all one floor. And they go from a classroom to a gymnasium to a room that, you know, if you're upset with yourself or you're angry, you know, they learn how to deal with those things. They just go in this room and have There's a room set for this. Go in there and change your stinking thinking, you know, and get some altitude to your bad attitude. And it's just amazing how they learn to control themselves, self-discipline. Well, I've always been impressed ever since the first time I heard about it 6 years ago. And I just wish we could grow that program for the benefit of all the kids. They don't have to join the military. There's no requirement. But all of a sudden, as their leaders in their, I don't know if they're called squadrons or what are they called?
Squads.
You know, all of a sudden you see a potential, you know, colonel,
yeah,
a potential general, a potential president even. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just fabulous. So this subject reminded me of that, and I thought, my goodness. And the staff there are just totally committed to these kids. It's just awesome. I appreciate the guard and certainly appreciate Colonel Caldwell for this. I'm sad we lost our opportunity to have one more in the state because we didn't step forward in the last session and come up with some money. It would have been the best thing we could have done for our kids. I mean, they don't even think of a drug. Meth doesn't even have a meaning. You know, it's another bad four-letter word, and they just don't go there, and they don't have to. So I wish I could resend all my kids there. At 37, though, I'd be too old. Anyways, awesome. Besides troops to teachers, I also appreciate the AFL-CIO's helmets to hard hats. That's another great opportunity.
I need to follow up on that. Maybe my lunchtime today.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to close then, if I haven't already, the work session on House Bill 3053, did I?
I think you do it again.
Not at all. All right, and now to House Bill 2677. I'll open a work session.
Madam Chair, on House Bill 2677, you heard this on the 5th of April. It creates an Oregon National Guard life insurance reimbursement program to reimburse members of the Oregon National Guard for premiums paid for federal service members' group life insurance. It appropriates a blank amount of general fund to the program. It declares an emergency, takes effect July 1st, 2005. Madam Chair, under the background information, we do point out that federal service members group life insurance program allows service members the option of buying life insurance through payroll deduction. The current premium is $16.25 a month for the full $250,000 in life insurance coverage. This bill does not provide for payment of that premium directly, but sets up a fund for reimbursing those individuals who have taken advantage of that federal service members group life insurance program.
Okay. Jim, on this dollar amount where we have the blank, how do we fill that in?
This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. You and we have asked for fiscal on this, I believe. So I don't know what that fiscal would be, and I don't believe that to refer it to Ways and Means, you wouldn't need to fill in that blank. We can, if you would like, ask fiscal to make an estimate and put a number in that blank, if you'd like us to do that.
Colonel Caldwell, could you come forward, please? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. I think we did do an estimate on that. I've looked through my papers. I didn't bring it with me. It's $16.25 a month. Average deployment is 18 months. The number of soldiers that we have and airmen that have been mobilized since 911, and I think that's what the bill, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it goes back to that.
How many total FARG members have been activated to this war?
Madam Chairman, right now we're roughly at about 4,000 of the Oregon National Guard total mobilizations since September 11th of 2001.
And the majority of those, has their duty been 18 months?
Madam Chairman, yes. I would say probably 70% of that group. About 30% of them were 12-month deployments, 9 and 12 months at the post 911. Subsequent to that, after probably 2002, midway through 2002, the deployments extended on to 18 months. So I think the first 1,500 or so of our deployments were roughly a year, and then since that time, the last 3,500 people that have been deployed have been 18 months, some of them 19, some of them 20, but that's about as long as we've gone. So I think you could probably average that somewhere around. I would take an average of 18 months times that number times the monthly rate, and that would be pretty close to the fiscal. And I, as I said, I think I'm pretty sure that let's say fiscal asked us for fiscal. I just didn't stick it in my case today. I don't know why.
I am just well, I do have the listing here, and you know this rate structure. I'm sure everybody has that. So if we took the 1625 and just kept it at a 18-month basis and times the 4,000, seems like that would work.
Madam Chair, that would take care of what we've done so far, but keep in mind that we know we have at least 1,000 more soldiers that are in the queue for deployment in March. To Afghanistan. So I guess the good news is that will pretty much go through all of our units. I think we'll only have a couple small 50, 75-man units that we have not deployed, and then I guess we start again.
And would this 1,000 have been men and women who've already been?
No, this 1,000 will most...
First duty over.
Most of them will have their first duty with this deployment in March. The majority, the vast majority of them will be. Some of them could be up for another round. But right now, under the current federal legislation, there's a 24-month cap. You can only serve 24 months unless you volunteer to go beyond that, which some of our people have done that. But in general, that isn't the case. So I think largely you could just use that as a mean number.
Okay. Colonel Caldwell, if an individual has committed a crime and but would like to continue serving, a grand theft might have been the case, or a break-in, and would like to go with the Guard on a next duty, that takes a governor, what do you call it? Pardon?
Pardon.
Do we do that?
Madam Chair, we're very similar to any other, I guess, organization in our country, is that typically if somebody has a criminal background, one, they can't get in. We do a criminal background check before they're enlisted, unless it can be waived. And there are certain standards that you can get waivers, not necessarily a pardon but or an expungement, but there are certain waivers depending on the level of the particular activity. Generally speaking, given the scenario that you gave here, we will not. No, they will not be deployed. In fact, they will be discharged from the Guard. Our regulations and our rules are very consistent, I think, with any other major government operation. Again, there are anomalies to everything, and there are exceptions to every rule, but generally speaking, probably not 100%, but I would say pretty close to 100%. If there's a felon, if you've committed a felon and you're a member of the Guard, then we will discharge you. You'll go through a similar process. You'll get an opportunity to state your case, but we don't keep felons. That's not our... We're not rehabilitation. That isn't our job.
And how many individuals how many Guard members have lost their life in the Afghan-Iraqi war?
Madam Chairman, right now we're looking at 10 individuals who have perished in this conflict so far.
Committee members, when we first talked about this, we said we wanted to make it retroactive, and I'm looking at this bill, and I don't see that that occurred. So if we made it retroactive to include those 10 individuals, would there be a problem with anything?
My question, Madam Chair, can we do that via insurance, or we have to just do that with a lump sum payout?
Can't do it.
Right. I assume as much. So it's.
Madam Chair, this bill calls for a reimbursement of participants' payments, so we could investigate that aspect of it to reimburse the premiums.
Madam Chair, two items I'd point out too is this: when the supplemental passes Congress, both versions of the negotiations and the supplemental include this in it. So if and when the supplemental passes, this bill may be moot. So I think the course of action is to send it down to Ways and Means as the backstop. And then make any amendments we need down there and wait and see. I mean, if they do not pass the supplemental before closer to signing die,
then go.
Then it's a go. And if they do pass the supplemental, then this bill is moot because the $250,000 level will be paid for automatically under the new law.
And is it true at the current time the life insurance is only $10,000?
No, it's not, madam. The $10,000 is, in fact, a gratuity that's paid. That's a separate item. The present minimum amount is, correct me if I'm wrong, Colonel, I think $100,000.
Correct.
Automatic supplement. Automatic is $100,000. And it is in the present supplemental that is before Congress that where it raises the minimum level of $250,000.
So for the 10, then we would only have to make up the difference, which would be
$150,000. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So do we have to wait?
Which would be, you know, the millions.
1.9.
Yeah.
So that'd be about half of what we get.
$1,150,000. No, $1,500,000.
Yes, Madam Chair, I was doing some scribbling, and I looked around and I saw there were five or six other members' calculations as well. The number I came up was $1,200,000. I don't know what everybody else came up with.
I'm a little higher than that.
What times 10?
Well, if it's prospective only.
$150,000 times 10.
If it's prospective only, it'd be about $400,000.
So in the supplement.
If it's if we include everybody who served, it would be $1.5 million. Approximately.
But then if you take the figure from 250 to 150,000.
We could also contact the insurance company and ask if we could.
I don't think we can.
Maybe we could just
today.
Pay retroactively the $16 a month for these individuals who've lost their lives. And that would maybe. Let's just work on it. How about that?
And Madam Chair, I might just add that to my knowledge, and I wouldn't say this is absolute, but as I recollect, as we looked at all of the soldiers who have perished, all of them had full maximum serviceman group life insurance. So the families were getting the maximum. Some of them even had supplemental insurance that they chose to purchase through a program we have in the state through the National Guard Association. So to my knowledge, there has been no... somebody said, I refuse to take it. I'm going to go and take my chances. That just didn't happen. Most of our soldiers are encouraged to do it. Well, all of them are encouraged to do it. And I would say a high majority of them who are deployed take the maximum amount allowed by the law.
Any other discussion on House Bill 2677?
Madam Chair, can I ask?
Yes. Representative Hunt, first.
In light of the limited scope of dollars we're going to have this session, even though we're dealing with millions, but if this is over a million by itself, I guess I'm obviously, if the federal legislation takes care of it, that's great, we're good to go. I think the proposal you proposed, Madam Chair, of that very narrow group of folks who have lost their lives, going back and giving them a lump sum that basically covers that, would be very affordable and be the right thing to do. I guess I'm just trying to get your sense, Colonel, looking at the whole scope of things that we're trying to address in terms of unmet needs, if for those other soldiers who have not lost their lives, if this meets an unmet need, if this becomes a recruiting retention tool for you, especially when you're balancing it off against other competing needs that we've talked about other days.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, and that's a very good question. I think as we have asked for input back from our soldiers and what, you know, what they, if they had a wish list, what they would get, this is going to be on that list, but I can tell you that it's probably not going to be in the top three. And that seems to be the, it's probably in the top five, maybe fifth, but it's not, certainly not in the top three. If you're looking for, a check the wind kind of a gauge. I think it is a valuable tool for us to, as soldiers are deploying, particularly for families, $16.25 a month isn't a lot of money, but over an 18-month period, that's not a bad, it's not a bad piece to go back to their families. And it also, I think, it extends a commitment from the state saying that, you know, that we're not going to put that burden on you and your families, and we're just going to take care of it. That, to me, is a positive thing. I think it's, if you look at soldiers who are enlisting versus soldiers who are deploying and deployed, you're going to have a different opinion. I don't think this is going to matter a big deal with respect to recruitment. I think it could add for retention, because I think families are going to be more inclined to suggest to themselves and understand themselves that the state really does care about us and our well-being. So that, I think, has a different vein to it.
I think I'll point out at this time, you will need to recall the governor said he's going to do this. So this was in his veterans package, which we were delighted to see. The U.S. Senate Bill 77, it's my understanding, in Congress, has a death, I hate to call it a death gratuity, but anyway, for $100,000, life insurance for $400,000, and the government pays the premium on $150,000 of that $500,000. That's my understanding.
You mean as of now, Madam Chair?
If it passes. No, this is a Senate Bill 77, is my understanding. It's in Congress.
It's in Congress. That's correct, ma'am. But that bill is already in the supplemental bill that's before, which is not that. There's an additional. It does, in fact, if it passes, the gratuity would be raised from $10,000 to $100,000 retroactive to 9/11.
Okay.
And we had that discussion in revenue because we were attempting to make sure that if that does happen, that is tax-free money to the dead soldiers. But and I'll also follow up on that, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. And then the other question is, and we're going to learn how to do this, but this does not include the reserves. Mr. McDonald, do you want to speak to that again?
Yeah, but I'm happy. I don't
think I'm going to call it now. We need one central headquarters in Oregon for reserves.
It's called the Oregon National Guard.
We need to have the Oregon Department of Reserves outside of the National Guard.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. Yes, this does not include the reserves. I hope the bill passes on the national level and this becomes moot. But we should not leave out the reserves. They're not second-class citizens, and they have lost men overseas.
Do you have any idea how many they've lost, Oregon?
I know Eugene Marines have lost either one or two. I don't know what about the Army or Navy or Coast Guard. In fact, I know the Navy has lost none because the only Navy man lost is a Marine. Navy corpsman with Marines that was lost yesterday.
Technically, man, there's been 44 Oregon residents killed.
Right. But I'm wondering how many in the reserves.
Madam Chair, if I recall properly, I think it's like two or three. There was the recent death of the chaplain from Eugene. There was a young soldier killed in the transportation company up in Portland. There was an engineer company. And then I think one engineer, so I'm going to say three off the top of my head, have perished in this conflict, and they were U.S. Army reservists.
Okay. Maybe we'll ask Department of Veteran Affairs to get us, would Paula, would you please, so we can know. Okay, if there's no more discussion on this bill, this time I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2677, and we'll work on it again. I'm going to open up, Representative Krupp is back, so I'm going to open a public hearing. I believe it's on House Bill 3331. Representative Krupp.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3331 sets the pay of the Adjutant General and Assistant Adjutants General to pay levels prescribed for members of the active military who hold the same grade. It would declare an emergency effective July 1st, 2005. You have the dash one amendment, which would set the pay of the deputy in the military department to the amount prescribed for members of the active military who hold the same grade.
Welcome back, Representative Krupp.
Good morning again, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17. House Bill 3331 is an idea that I've been kicking around for the last 4 years, actually. Decided to bring it forward this particular session. Last session would have been even harder to have tried to come up with money for it. It's not a lot easier this particular session, but we are at least in the black in this particular budgetary period. Frankly, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Adjutant General and his deputies, frankly, there are 25 colonels and the Oregon National Guard that make more money than the Adjutant General. So typically, and we are, and I think you have, or you're getting copies of my my prep sheet here that shares with you why I decided to do this. Bottom line is they ought to at least get paid what their colleagues are in neighboring states, and that's basically what we're asking for here in this bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Krupp. Any questions of the good representative?
Could we have just a moment to look at his
yes.
handout? Thank you.
Representative Krupp, maybe we need to bring Colonel Call. It's kind of awkward here,
Madam Chair. It would be awkward because Colonel Caldwell is certainly one of the individuals that would deservedly benefit from this bill.
I would just like to ask Colonel Caldwell. Let you check in first,
Madam Chair. For the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director, Oregon Military Department.
Is there always one assistant attorney, adjutant general?
Madam Chair, no. In fact, what we have, our system, and again, I didn't bring the budget, but if you looked at our manning document, what you would see is you would see an assistant adjutant general for the Army and assistant adjutant general for the Air National Guard. Those folks are traditionally non-full-time. We call them traditional guardsmen. So they do their duties and they're paid through the federal pay system for the time that they put in. But they're not full-time, typically not full-time. The exception to that rule was several years ago we sought approval from this legislature and through the governor's office and had one of our Army assistant adjutant generals brought on full-time through the state pay system. So they could that individual could command the 41st Separate Infantry Brigade. That position is now currently filled by a federal paid employee, so that position has basically gone vacant in the last part of this budget. So typically what you have in our organization is you have an adjutant general who is a full-time state employee. You have typically one assistant, either a deputy or an assistant adjutant general who's full-time, and then you have myself and three or four other, in my category, I guess, equal or semi-equal status as state employees. As I probably indicated at one point, but just to give you a perspective, the state of Oregon pays out of the general fund right now, including those positions I just spoke to. We have 43 generally funded positions in the Oregon National Guard out of a total employee count full-time right at 2,100. The rest of those employees are paid either through the federal government exclusively, don't show up in the state pay system in any way, shape, or form, or they are a mix of money that comes from the federal government to the state, and then we pay them as state employees. The pure state employee number is around 430 right now. Total state employees, but only 43 of those are general fund out of that state employee batch.
So, Colonel Caldwell, having been present when your budget was heard,
yes, ma'am.
Did that include this increase?
No, ma'am. This is not part of the current budget, the governor's budget. It's not in the governor's recommended budget.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this obviously has to go to Ways and Means, where I will have to scrap and fight for every penny to make this a reality.
And what's the delta? Now, what's the difference between neighboring tags and ours?
Let me answer that.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, typically it varies. I mean, it's. I thought I had a report in here that gave that, but generally speaking, Oregon's salary is lower than the other neighboring states.
Are we in the hundreds of thousands? Are we? Where are we?
I don't this have percentage a clue. It's probably. Well, to give you an example, right now the position is. Let's see here. It's an H, I believe. And that would place it probably in the neighborhood of maybe 10% below. Right in that neighborhood.
Below California, Idaho, and Washington?
Right, just generally speaking. Several of the states have gone to this federal pay system. It's and what has occurred, just so you kind of get an idea of what's happened, is that states all over the country have had difficulty in budgeting during the recession, and over the last decade, I suspect, the same. Where at the same time, the federal government has increased annually 4.5%, 3.5%, percentage-wise across the board, which I guess we can all understand that because it's a bigger look at the picture, but you get down to the individual states. So the gap has widened is essentially what's occurred. Because some states have had no increases and limited increases, and meanwhile, the federal government is continuing to march on, so the gap continues to get larger.
Well, according to this document that we've received from military.com, I guess for those that want to look this up who may be listening, it says the pay tables below reflect the laws enacted under the 2005 National Defense Authorization Act. The 2005 pay raise is an across-the-board 3.5% for all pay grades. Now, did your budget, because of this, include a 3.5% pay raise for your men and women when you did your budget? Do you know?
Madam Chair, no, it did not. We did not calculate.
You did not.
We calculated no increase in any of our salaries in our budget.
Do you know how long it's been since there were any increases?
Well, I know that we're on a pay freeze right now. I think this is the third or fourth pay freeze we've had since 91, 93, right in there. So,
third two-year pay freeze?
Yes, ma'am. Some of those some of the times the employees got pay raises through negotiations and through the legislative process, but in one of those instances under Governor Roberts, I know all the managers were frozen, but the employees came up, which it's prerogative of the governor, so we work for.
Representative Hoquist, if you look at this chart, can you tell me, because I have no clue if we're, let me get here, the O category?
O-8 line, ma'am.
O-8. So on page 3 of the page 5, of 5 pages, the dash 8 says, over 6 years of service the individual makes. Is that the 87-25-50?
No, Madam Chair, if you go to page 4 or 5 is where you need
four.
To be at. And down at the bottom, you see the 08 category. You're talking about the second or second column forward, generally speaking. You're talking about...
So $10,000 to $11,000 a month?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, and that differs from the one on page 3 because of what?
For time and service.
I see. So are the individuals we're talking about, Representative Krupp, do you know how what their years of service are?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no, I don't for certain. I will share with you in answer to your question about how the Adjutant General, just him, as a comparison, total compensation in Arizona is about $3,000 more than ours makes. California is about...
More per month?
Yeah, no, per year,
per year,
Madam Chair. California's is... about $57,000 a year more.
$57,000?
Colorado's is about $25,000 more. Idaho makes $6,000 more than ours. And that was as of 2002. These are three-year-old tables. I don't have the current ones. So we've fallen even further behind from there. So, Madam Chair, just for point of context, you can see on my handout to you, I compare the state police, which has roughly 500 people in their organization. Their superintendent and deputies are two pay grades higher than what our military leaders are in Oregon, with 2,100 full-time employees and almost 6,000 part-time. So, as a matter of keeping it in perspective.
Madam Chair, Colonel Caldwell, can you just give me a quick rundown of the present adjutant general pay, assistant adjutant general pay, just in round numbers, and the number of general officer management days provided to a general officer these days?
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, the adjutant general's pay is roughly $102,000 right now. The assistant adjutant general's pay is going to be about $92,000. Each general officer receives 25 general officer man days, and those are. But keep in mind, as you take those days, as you would with drill pay or AT pay, you have to take a leave day in order to receive that. You can't do both. You can't take a drill pay, can't take an AT day pay, general officer mandate pay, and still be on state status. You have to take a day of leave or do it on a weekend. So you don't get to double dip. You got to show your leave card.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
So is that in an addition, the 25 mandates for National Guard generals?
Correct.
Because I know the Army Reserve gets like 131. So.
131 days off.
So
no days pay.
Days pay. So this 25 man days is in addition to the 48 drill days.
That is correct. In addition to the 15 days of annual leave.
Okay.
Right. In addition to how many days of guard pay? 40 what?
48 days of individual training days. Now.
Plus 15 days what?
Annual training.
And so, also in addition to this, do we know they're part of PERS, right? The
yes,
PERS
ma'am.
Program.
Yes, ma'am.
So we make that contribution for them, which is what is it, 27%?
32
now.
I think we figured 31 or 32.
Yeah. When you speak of the Arizona, California, Colorado, Representative Krupp, does it include their
fringe benefits?
No. That's just strictly salary.
Just salary, and Madam Chair, Washington's AG is up in 02 is $123,000. And ours currently today is $101,000, and their AG is considerably higher than that now.
And compared to the number of people under them, how does Washington compare?
It's a good question, Colonel Caldwell. Numbers of full-time employees and guard members?
Madam Chair, in comparison to Washington, we're a bit larger than the state of Washington's National Guard by about 2,000 total population. We're almost double the size of the Idaho National Guard. We're probably close to double the Nevada Guard. California Guard is probably 1.5 times larger than we are, or 2 times larger than we are, at least 2 times. They got a division there, I think. I don't remember the exact number, but it's pretty large.
Madam Chair? Yes, Representative Croft. Just, Colonel Caldwell, so I understand this, maybe I missed it. So these positions are, these is the Adjutant General and Colonel. How many people are they supervising? Are they overseeing all these? I mean, how many positions are we talking about?
Madam Chair, Representative Comp, the Adjutant General is in charge of all the National Guard. You have 2,000 full-time employees,
okay,
both federal and state mix. Those are full-time. And then you have 6,000, what in state parlance would be temporary employees.
Okay.
You know, so in essence, you got 8,000 total people that you supervise, you're in charge of, and
daily, and then 6,000 part-time.
2,000 daily, 6,000 part-time, total of 8.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I just have a comment for a follow-up, and most people aren't as crazy as I am, but I'm going to put this on the record. The reality is that I make approximately, when I'm working as a school principal, and this is average pay for a school principal, I get $7,000 a month for my salary, and I supervise approximately 60 teachers and 560 students.
You're overpaid, aren't you?
Well, I'm not saying I'm overpaid, my friend, but when we're asking, when we're asking what these gentlemen are doing, I'm sitting here a little bit
perplexed?
In awe.
In awe.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I just ask this question one more time? Is the assistant tag and deputy one person?
Madam
or are
Chair,
we talking about three different people?
Madam Chair, you're talking different, you know, different titles. We have in our system right now, we have three deputies and or assistant adjutant generals, and then we have one deputy, which is my position. I'm a deputy to the adjutant general. The rest of them are also deputies, but they're in the general category, and I'm not. I'm the deputy director as opposed to deputy adjutant general. So they're two distinct different positions.
Okay. Would it be possible, Representative Krupp, would you help us out by putting together a chart showing current salaries, years of duty, what their OA or OE or E dash or whatever is, and for each position, so we could just see it in one page. Would that be possible? We could discuss that on Thursday.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to do that. I probably will not be with you on Thursday, as I have to attend the funeral of my cousin. So I will not be able to share that with you, but if it would be possible, I would leave that information with Colonel Caldwell, and he could explain that.
And we can carry it over to Tuesday if that would be helpful.
And
we'll have a work session.
At your pleasure, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to ask this question in a very general way, so consider it from that form, please. Does the rate of pay that a state is able to or willing to pay an adjutant general or the adjutant general's immediate assistance, does that affect recruitment for those positions, in your opinion?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, no, I don't think it does. I think that I think in most cases it is. It's just not a factor. I think it has an influence on the undoubtedly it does. But my experience in 17 years working full time here at this military department, that most of the people that I've seen who have sought or desired to be the adjutant general would most likely do it for nothing if they were asked to do it. So I think that's, and I don't mean to be quipped with that, but I think it's a. You know, the federal government does compensate us for the time that we serve in federal duty. So they do get compensated for that in addition to their state salary. So it's not like, they're being, backhanded by everyone. It is a situation internally that I would tell you that has its moments. And I would tell you that below that adjutant general's position, we have somewhat been a farm club for some other agencies in our state positions, and or they get into a state position seeking one of the federal positions because they know it's going to pay better, it's going to pay more, and it's going to have a better quality of life for them and their families. So that's probably where we have more impact, not at the adjutant general's level.
Okay. Follow up, if I may. In the current pay scheme that Oregon has, does a general officer coming from federal duty to a position like state adjutant general actually
got to
take a pay cut?
Yes, sir.
Thanks. Madam Chair and members of the committee, Vice Chair Barnhart, to share with you a couple of quick stories about those very questions. Shortly after I introduced these bills, I got a call from a reporter saying, did you introduce these bills to help bring General Reese back here, who was serving in the Pentagon, had been our AG for a number of years, went to the Pentagon. And I said no, because frankly, I don't even know General Reese. When I came in, General Bergen was the new tag here. So, I didn't do it for that purpose, but that illustrates that General Reese will come back from the Pentagon at lower pay here to serve in Oregon. This is just a matter of equity.
Yeah.
The average for all of our neighboring states for adjutant general pay in 2002, the average was almost $108,000. That was the average for all of the western states. And frankly, we today, and that was in 2002, today in 2005, our AG gets 101. So it's just a matter of equity, frankly. If they're performing the same duties, making the same sacrifice in public service, and I think they ought to get paid at least to the average, if nothing else, and certainly what the federal government provides.
Any other questions of the Colonel or Representative Krupp? Not, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3331. I'm going to open the public hearing. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3333.
Madam Chair, Krupp. House Bill 3333 creates a Wounded Soldier Relief Program.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I know that there are other bills of this type. I believe that Vice Chair Barnhart is a sponsor of a similar concept. Our concept is slightly different in that we are providing an opportunity for Oregonians to make a decision to give a portion or all of their income tax refund to soldiers, both Guard and Reserve, and I need to add the reserve language into this bill, that have been wounded in combat. And the reason I say that is because if I know you've heard testimony from soldiers who have been wounded, you understand how it affects their lives and it changes their lives forever in so many ways. During that time, they're convalescing they still have to pay the bills. And that means you can't necessarily go back to work, to your job. If you're still in active status, yes, you are getting paid more, but as you know, if you've seen and heard a lot of testimony about the typical pay cuts that many members of the Guard and Reserve take to go on active status, they're unable to work. They still have to pay rent, utilities, those types of things. And this would be set up, this fund would be a separate account set up for that purpose to help them with those daily expenses. And again, we have many of these checkoffs as you know, currently on our in our tax policy and on the form. And I think it's a good idea to offer this opportunity for Oregonians to say thank you to those who continue to sacrifice, even though they may be away from a circumstance where they've been injured either in combat or in a training exercise that does impact them severely economically. And that's what the concept is, Madam Chair, and I would ask that you consider it.
Thank you very much, Representative Krupp, for being concerned about our troops. How do you perceive, and I know it'd have to probably be administrative rule, heaven forbid, but had to have some more detail, but how would we determine what wounds, entitled an individual to this fund?
That is a great question, Madam Chair, and I would ask Colonel Caldwell to join me again here to help us explain that. There's not a definition in the bill precisely as to what a wounded soldier is, Madam Chair. If it's necessary for us to provide that, I think we could do that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Military Department. There is a designation that the federal government does give to soldiers who are wounded. Wounds are, I think, typically adjudicated based on, there's accidents, there's injuries, and there's combat wounds. In the back of the room we have, today with me, I have Lieutenant Peter Wood, who is one of those recipients of that wound, and he received a Purple Heart, which is typically the best, I guess, designation for somebody who has received a combat wound. I don't know if the intent is to, there are folks that get injured. They're doing their job, forthrightly, and something happens and they get injured, and I don't know if the intent is to go that far or not, but if it is, then that brings up a different category, and then you would have to have a medical treatment record to indicate that you were wounded in some or injured. And if that was the case, then a medical treatment record, as determined by, I guess in the civilian world we call it lost days, but, lost work days for state accident insurance purposes or something of that nature. In our world, it becomes a medical leave situation or a profile where you're profiled that you can't do your duty because you've been injured. So there are those mechanisms inside the military's process that you can use for determining, depending on how wide you want to go with it.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Section 1 of the bill talks about Oregon National Guard who've been on federal active duty for 30 days or more who have been wounded or injured while on federal active duty. And it would be my intent, and was my intent, that if you are called to active duty and you're either wounded or injured in a training accident or whatever while you're on, the circumstances and the reasons for this bill apply. If you're called up to active and you get hurt in a training accident and you have to convalesce, and it's happened, we've had quite a few injuries actually of individuals called up, both in the reserve and guard. Those same issues of having to deal with convalescence and getting back to wholeness, if possible, some cases is not. Those issues are still relevant in your life, and it would be my intention that if you are called to active duty service of this country as Guard or Reserve, that this fund would apply to both those who are wounded or injured.
And Representative Krupp, based on, we're going to get to our next bill, the definition of a veteran, here they can be ordered to federal active duty for 30 days or more, but we would need to say, or who have been wounded or injured while on federal active duty, because one day counts. So they don't have to have been there for 30 days. Well, I'm just saying, it's looked at in two ways. One, do they have to have been employed overseas or in a war zone for 30 days? The answer is no, per this committee. One day constitutes a veteran in any kind of combat zone.
Madam Chair, I'll let Colonel Caldwell address. Typically, 30 days is 30 and 45 days are if you're called away from your home and your business and your place of work for one day, that I would suppose that is a different issue to some extent. Colonel Caldwell, your thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you know, and it is a wide, you know, it's a big net. You can go on federal active duty for a day. You can go on for, you know, up to a federal deployment, which is what we're dealing with, I think, currently now, primarily in the Reagan National Guard. But, you know, and I guess maybe there is some definition. You know, I think you're trying to get some definition here, and I would suggest that a program such as this, when a person's injured, I've had soldiers get injured who went to annual training. They have the same problems that the guys do that get put on Title 10 duty, and they have the same issues where they don't have income, they can't work. We have what we term a line of duty investigation. Line of duty, LOD, is the common acronym for those who are supposedly going to get their pay. That program is from the federal government is extremely bureaucratic and, frankly, it's broke. I think Representative Boquist could probably testify that in his commands he's seen that happen. I would recommend, I guess if I was king for the day, I would say we take the 30 days out and say federal active duty. If you're injured, you're injured. You have the same problems. You have the same issues. If there's a fund there and a family needs it, then I think we should try to help them do that. And if we're going to amend that, I'd also take out on line 11, where it says adopt rules. We don't adopt rules. We make regulations. So I would that's the legislative council's. We're going to train them as the session goes through.
I know. We've got to put them in the guard.
Yes, ma'am. But
put them on part-time duty so they can speak our language.
Yes, ma'am. That would be very helpful.
Hour. Did you notice that, y'all?
Okay. So I would say make it wider, not limit it, because I've had experiences with some of my soldiers that were just horrific, and it was no fault of their own. They were doing their job. They got injured. They were serving. They were training to serve their country in some respect, and yet the impacts are just as horrific as if they had gone to Iraq or they went to Fort Bliss. It doesn't matter. They still have those impacts on their families.
And Madam Chair, I might share with you my thoughts as you and I are sponsors of this bill, as are various members of the committee. If it so pleases the committee to move this bill, I would be happy to draft those changes, all of those changes, in the form of an amendment.
And the other issue that we need to discuss is, we have two funds now. Both are emergency relief funds, one for the military and one for our, you know, veterans, calling these active military and veterans who are currently inactive. So my concern, we have two bills already that we've passed, one that we make a contribution to the Oregon Veterans Home, and also that we, you know, have the Emergency Relief Fund for Veterans. I think we have to be very careful about what we call this one. We don't want to have conflict. For example, is a wounded soldier a disabled soldier? We have the Disabled Veterans of America. I got one yesterday, two or three communications from the Hospitalized Veterans of America. I believe that's what it was called. I know it's Hospitalized. So I think we need to think that. Representative Focus, do you have any comment regarding that?
Madam Chair, the only thing I would say to your concern is that this bill is not intended for veterans. This bill is intended for soldiers who are currently enlisted. And that is a distinction that I would hope you all would consider.
Yeah. How about, would it be okay if you two wordsmithed this a little better and possibly come up with an amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would appreciate the opportunity to do that. And any other suggestions that you or the committee members would make, I'd be happy to entertain those. I see a lot of positives out of having all types of funds that direct Oregonians' attentions to the sacrifice that veterans, disabled veterans have made, current soldiers have made and are making on our behalf. I see nothing negative about that at all. I think every time a taxpayer looks at those checkoff forms and sees a number of opportunities to help veterans, to help soldiers, it's a good thing.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to say one other thing, and this is in on behalf of Representative, my good representative friend here from Sublimity, Jeff Krupp. We had situations where we had soldiers' families who were suffering. We didn't have resources to take care of those soldiers, either to get them home for the breaks before they went off to Iraq and or when they were here. I mean, you soup to nuts, we had every issue you can imagine. And Representative Krupp, by virtue of his part-time job of doing things on a local radio station, raised, I think it was over $60,000 of donations from the good people of Oregon to help our soldiers and other soldiers who needed it and their families, and that was an incredible response, incredible gesture on his part, and I think we're forever grateful for, and I know the families are. If we could line them up, I'm sure they would fill the halls to thank him and the efforts that he made, and it was virtually almost single-handedly, and I you know, for one, appreciate that for my colleagues and my fellow soldiers in the Oregon Guard, and I think that and their families, and I think he deserves a great deal of credit for taking that upon. He didn't have to do it. In fact, he surprised me by his he told me he was doing it and our phones lit up and we became and we were building this bike while we rode it, literally. We didn't even know how to function and we were trying to put it together as he was announcing it and doing his efforts on the airwaves. So it was incredibly successful and there was a lot of good things happened because of those generosity of those people thanks to his efforts. So thank you very much. And your viewing audience and the committee needs to know that he was instrumental single-handedly making that happen.
Well, I think it's wonderful too, and I heard Representative Krupp many times on that issue. And every time I heard him, boy, my heart would just, you know, go out to all of these soldiers and airmen. And I am so grateful and want to thank you. Let's just applaud and let him know we appreciate it. And you can do it again. I heard today as I was coming, I'm thrilled, the same radio station. This was Lars Larson this time.
Golfing with the Guard, Madam
with
Chair.
The Guard.
That's right. I was just going to mention that.
And I'm thrilled to death, and they're raising money for the African Iraqi Memorial. And I just thought, all right, here we go again. It's just awesome. So thank you very much. Thank you, KXL, and Lars, and Jeff, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam
Glad
Chair.
Glad you all have good voices.
Thank
and
you.
Make getting our story told.
It is
known the heroic activities of all these brave men and women.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. It's just a real testament to the incredible generosity of Oregonians.
The Oregonians are, aren't they?
It is an amazing thing to see. And
wonderful.
And you know what? I have to tell you, what's amazing is to watch, and I saw this recently on a flight back from Washington, D.C., watch a first-class passenger get up and give his seat to a soldier.
I love it.
I got to tell you, that is so cool to see, and it's an amazing, I mean, and it's such a wonderful turnaround to see that happen, and you compare that and contrast that to what happened to our Vietnam veterans when they came home. And it's a wonderful thing to see this country heal from the wounds of Vietnam, I believe, and see Americans and Oregonians stand up. And they're going to have that opportunity again on May 27th. When we hold a fundraising golf tournament for the of Golfing with the Guard that benefits the Iraqi and Afghan war memorial and benefits Guard families. It would be a great opportunity for Oregonians to participate in that in some way.
And I offered
looking
caddy.
Forward. Wonderful. I'm looking forward to playing if they'll let me.
All right.
I just have to raise money from a sponsor to pay my way in.
What is the sponsorship?
It's not that bad, actually. It just depends on the level that you want to go. It can be several thousand dollars down to several hundred. So
if you let us know, we'll promote it.
I'll be raising money for someone to pay for my my golfing that particular day, Madam Chair. And with that, I thank you for the opportunity to share these thoughts with you. If it would please the chair, members of the committee, I will work on amendments to House Bill 3333 and bring that back before you, if that would please the chair and members of the committee.
It pleases the chair, and I'm going to close the public hearing on.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry about that.
I want to mention one thing, Representative. When you do the amendments, you might want to put a provision in there that keeps the interest off the fund in the fund.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Steinberg. That's a great, great point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is the young man's name? Peter Wood. What is his title?
Lieutenant.
I'd like to call Lieutenant Peter Wood forward, please.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant Wood. For the record, would you identify yourself?
For the record, my name is Lieutenant Pete Wood. I'm with the Oregon National Guard.
And could you would you mind to tell us about your service?
Over the last couple of years, I've been in the Guard since 98. Was an ROGC cadet at a Western Oregon University.
All right.
I volunteered to go with 2162 to Iraq, and I was a platoon leader out of Corvallis in the Corvallis Army Bravo Company 2162. I served in Taji, Iraq, and I was wounded September 13th, 2004, in the same attack. My driver, Specialist Ben Eisenberg, and Port Observers, Staff Sergeant David Weisenberg were killed.
Well, Lieutenant Wood, we just want to thank you for your service. We hope your health is back, and we just appreciate you so much and appreciate your leadership. We thank you for your heroism and giving us the freedom to talk like this.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And keeping us free. We're going to stand and honor you at this time.
Thank you.
Hey, a young men like you and women just really make us proud. You know.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I feel good that, you know, if I went on to that great sky above to know that we have young men like you and women who have those leadership talents.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Keep this country free for my grandchildren and all those kids. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, yes. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3333, and we are going to open a work session on 3333 next Thursday, and we'll be happy to have you individuals testify, Mr. LeBox and Mr. McDonald. We didn't forget you, but we're out of time. We're going to lose our committee now because of other obligations. I keep getting all these notes that say, you know, hurry up and shut up. On behalf of our committee, it was our honor to be here today. We're here to serve our veterans and to be sure that the vet net covers our entire state and every member of the families of our veterans and our current military. Thank you so much. The meeting's adjourned.